they have any pain associated with it, there is any change, you want to update your Braden scale, which is their risk for skin breakdown, because that in turn feeds into how you care plan their interventions. And if they need new interventions, you put those in place to keep it from getting any worse.
Hey out there, welcome back to the Nursing on Abuse podcast. My name is Rob. I'll be your host for this episode. Today we are talking about how to chart or document pressure injuries. Like what are we including in that documentation? How often should it be, and why is it important to document it itself? But we're not having that conversation alone. We are talking to the amazing Miranda Kearse to walk us through that process. But now it's time for the Nursing Home Regulation Question of the Week and your opportunity to win a Nursing Home Abuse Podcast mug, the perfect mug to drink from, or put it on your shelf, put pins in it, put your coins in it, functions as a container of all sorts. How do you win this, you might ask? Well, it's extremely complicated. You're going to go to TikTok. You're going to go to @JusticeForResidents. You're going to find the Question of the Week video. The thumbnail that you're looking for this question of the week is a skillet with bacon in it. You're going to answer the question of the week. You're going to click on that thumbnail. Then you're going to answer the question. Okay. But you're also going to need to put whether you like your bacon cooked in the skillet or in the oven. There are some people that prefer the oven to cooking their bacon rather than the skillet. Well, Rob, the oven provides a even cook. Like, what are we making, meth? You want your bacon to be uneven. You want some part to be extremely floppy. Hopefully it's the fat part. And maybe a part that's burned. Like, I'm not trying to win the beard award. Okay. And also the next thing you cook in the skillet, it's going to be delicious, right? So clearly you cook your bacon in the skillet, but if you prefer it in the oven, one of those two, you put it in the answer to the question. Then at random, someone will be chosen to win the mug. And the winners will be announced every Sunday on TikTok and at our website, shinkfirm.com/packpodcast/giveaway. Prizes shipped at the end of the month. So let's get into the question. All right. Difficulty level this week, folks, is hard. I'm going to say this is a difficult question. If you get this right, actually cook yourself some bacon. Even I don't care if it's midnight. Doesn't matter. Cook yourself some bacon. Be a Ron Swanson. Cook the whole package of bacon. Under 42 CFR 483.5, what is the definition of an adverse event? Is it A, an undesirable event that causes death? B, an undesirable event that causes death or serious injury? Or C, an undesirable event that causes death, serious injury, or the risk of death or serious injury? And that answer actually is C. A adverse event, which has its own string of things that must occur in the nursing home if it transpires, is an undesirable event that causes death, serious injury, or the risk thereof. So if you got that right, again, a lot of bacon for you. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we are going to be talking about documenting pressure injuries. But we're not doing that alone. We have the fantastic Miranda Kearse, RN, LNC, MSC. Miranda is the owner of Aquitas Consulting, LLC, and brings over 20 years of nursing experience in long-term care and acute care. She's served in roles including Director of Nursing, MDS Coordinator, and Infection Preventionist. Passionate about patient advocacy, she continues bedside care while providing expert legal nurse consulting. A DAISY Award recipient, Miranda remains dedicated to improving healthcare outcomes and inspiring the next generation, including 4 of her 7 children pursuing nursing. Miranda, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First off, 7 kids, okay? 7 kids and 4 of them are nurses. What's going on?
So I have a blended family. So I have 4 children of my own and 3 stepchildren. And actually 6 of the 7 are in healthcare and going into nursing. So none of them are nurses yet, but they're all working in healthcare and in nursing school.
I imagine that, at the dinner table or hanging out watching TV, if somebody gets a scratch or bangs their knee against the table or something, you get like a whole bunch of different diagnoses, a whole bunch of different, you know what I'm saying? Like a family of attorneys, you know what I mean? Like that's super interesting. That just stuck out to me in your bio out of anything. I was like, oh my gosh. So let me ask you this, okay? Kind of the first question would be, why in your experience would it be the case that charting pressure injuries is important? Like, why would it be important that we document that stuff from, shift to shift or day to day?
Because we have to know how to take care of a person and what they specifically need. It's not the same for every person. You have to make sure that the interventions that you're putting in place to take care of this person are effective. And if they're getting pressure wounds, something isn't working. They need something different, more interventions, different interventions, treatments, so that they don't decline.
And how often are we looking at a resident? Let's say the resident has developed a pressure injury. Okay, so you're going at to bedside and you're saying, okay, we have a stage two, three, partial, full thickness, whatever the case is. What are we doing when we are conducting that particular assessment, and how often should we be doing that?
So the wound should be assessed at a minimum every shift, but it doesn't mean that the treatment's being done. So if they have a treatment that's every other day, you at least want to put eyes on it to make sure that the dressing is intact, that it's clean, that there's nothing that's pulling the dressing off or getting underneath it in the meantime until the next dressing change. But the actual wound should be assessed every time the dressing changes due, and measurements are a minimum of every 7 days.
Okay, so let's get super just kind of like high level. When we say assessment of a wound, and let's just say, for example, it's stage three. So let's just say we have a stage three full thickness wound. Okay. What do you mean when you say assessment?
So if the dressing change is not due that day, I want to make sure that it's clean, dry, and it's intact. But if I'm assessing the wound, I want to know what it looks like, where it's at, if there's any drainage, if there's any odor, the length, width, and depth of it to make sure it's not deteriorating, that what you have in place for a treatment is effective.
So an assessment essentially is just going through and observing a checklist of things, right? Okay. So now, again, when typically when you are assessing a wound, and again, we'll keep it as a stage three wound, so it's potentially a dangerous thing. And you've done the assessment. What are you documenting, if anything? Or is it just, hey, I did an assessment, everything looks good, right? Like, walk us through the process of assessment to what gets put on paper or documented on the electronic chart.
I want to know any surrounding skin issues that they have around the wound. I want to know any drainage, any odor to the wound, any changes in it from the last assessment. If there's any changes or deterioration, even if the measurements are not due, say, for another 4 days, I'm going to measure that and make sure so that a new treatment or a new intervention can be put in place, because otherwise they'll deteriorate another 4 days waiting for the measurements to be done. But you also assess pain. They have any pain associated with it. If there is any change, you want to update your Braden scale, which is their risk for skin breakdown, because that in turn feeds into how you care plan their interventions. And if they need new interventions, you put those in place to keep it from getting any worse.
Miranda, that was a test because I have the watermelon book of for the surveyor manual that, and you hit every single one. Location, stage, size, presence of drainage or exudate, pain, wound bed, description. So that's how you know Miranda knows her stuff, is that she's got the surveyor guide memorized in her head. So tell me this. Okay, so you're saying in your experience that measurements at minimum are once a week.
At a minimum, it has to be every 7 days. So even if you do it on a Tuesday 1 week and a Wednesday the next, you're already out of compliance because that's 8 days.
And what would be the case that you would want to do it more often? Like what is, you mentioned it a second ago, but I wasn't paying attention because I was thinking about the, about putting the surveyor document in the camera. But what would make that be more sooner?
Just if I'm doing the dressing change and I notice that it's deteriorating, then I would go ahead and measure it so that the interventions and the treatments can be changed right then instead of waiting till the next scheduled day for measurements.
And how is that typically done? Like, is there like a special tape measure? Like, do you just put your thumb down there or like, you know?
There's usually tape measures for wounds.
And typically is it when you're doing this, and tell me, forgive me if we're too in the weeds on this, but like, how do you know from what point to what point? Like, is it the edge of the wound bed or do you include like the redness on the outside? How are you know when you're talking about length and width, like where does the length and width start and end?
So it's usually at the very edge of the wound, but then you also describe the outer edges if they're rolled or if they're macerated, if there's redness, anything outside of the wound, that's the peri-wound area. So you would describe that separately, but the actual wound is the length and width.
And what about depth? Are you literally just sticking the tape measure into the wound and taking a best guess based on what you see?
With the depth, you can, if the wound is big enough, and put it like that, but we usually use a Q-tip and mark the Q-tip and then measure the Q-tip.
That's way better than what I suggested because I'm sure that the Q-tip has got less germs on it. Okay, so kind of like using the Q-tip as the mark and you put the Q-tip up next to the tape measure. That makes sense. Okay. All right. So then you got length, width, and talk about the, if you can, why different types of liquid or drainage in the wound would matter to your assessment and kind of what they look like. Kind of run us through the different types that you might see.
So some of the drainage, it could be clear drainage, and you want the wound bed to be moist and to have that circulation. So that's not a bad thing, but if the drainage starts to become purulent or have a pus appearance, then your concern is for infection.
So every time that you go to that resident and you assess that wound, is it the case that you then, you know, you're looking for all those things that you described, like the pain, presence of pain, drainage, all that kind of stuff, is, and all that, every time you do that assessment, it gets documented, or it should.
It should. But like I said, if the treatments are scheduled for every other day, you're not going to pull the dressing off to check it necessarily. But a lot of times we have to do the dressing change extra just because it gets dirty or it gets pulled off or it gets wet. And, you know, you don't want a wet dressing unless it's ordered that way because it breeds bacteria that way.
What about the idea of taking pictures of the wound? Is this something that's typical, atypical?
I think that taking pictures of the wound is becoming more common now than it used to be. But I think it also depends on how bad the wound is or how fast it developed is when they take pictures.
And I guess, I mean, for me as a layperson, it makes sense to take pictures, right? But like, what's really happening when you're taking the pictures? Is it just like Because theoretically, you've got length, width, depth, presence of drainage, et cetera, et cetera. So like theoretically, you have it all there. Like what's the extra help from the photo?
I think that the photos help validate the healing process so you can actually see how it occurred and how it progressed. But it also guides care planning to make sure that what you say this wound is, what kind of wound it is, or what stage it is, that's accurate.
Have you ever heard of the term reverse charting? And if so, what is it?
Reverse charting is you want to chart everything at point of care. You don't always have that opportunity to do that because you don't have a computer in the room with you and things like that. So if I'm assessing a wound, I'm going to take in all my papers, fill it all out, write the time down, and make sure that I can put it in as soon as I leave the room. But that way my measurements are accurate. I'm not trying to remember what the measurements were because then it's a best guess. So you basically write everything down at the time and then put it in.
Okay, put it in later. Okay, so I guess in my mind, what I've always thought reverse charting was would be something along the lines of like just check marking looks the same as yesterday, or you know the no presence of drainage or no like I guess essentially copying the previous documentation. I always thought that's what reverse charting was. So reverse charting is basically just you took information and data but didn't enter it into the chart until later.
That's how I've always known it.
I see. Okay.
Is that you still do it point of care, but you do it from paper into the chart because you don't have the ability to have the computer in there.
I gotcha. Okay. I'm just a layperson. So, what about the idea of what I'm describing, which is to say that like, well, I didn't chart anything on that pressure injury because nothing changed from yesterday. You would say that's not appropriate. Even if nothing changed, something still has to be in the chart to document that.
A lot of facilities do chart by exception. So you only chart if something is out of the ordinary, but a wound is out of the ordinary. So there should be some documentation to show that somebody put eyes on that wound to make sure that even if it, like I said, the dressing wasn't due, that the dressing they have on is clean and it's dry and it's intact. There's no odor coming from it. There's no drainage coming through. There should be something to say somebody looked at that.
I was confusing reverse charting with charting by exception. So that's my bad. So you get to learn in real time on this show. Okay, that makes sense. So now, speaking of reverse stuff, what is reverse staging of a pressure injury?
Reverse staging would be, say you have a stage 4, you have got muscle or bone or tendons showing, and then it's healing. It used to be that they would say, well, now it's a stage 3. They don't do that anymore. They recommend that you don't do that because the tissue that fills in a wound is not regular tissue. It's scar tissue and things. So whatever the highest stage wound is, you should continue to use that and just refer to it as a healing stage 4 instead of now it's a stage 3, now it's a stage 2.
Because I guess as you indicated, that would give the false impression that it's as stable as a new stage 3 or a new stage 2 when in fact it's not, because the underlying tissue is still not great.
Yeah, and a stage 2, the peri wound, you know, is now scar tissue because it's a healing stage 4. It's mm-hmm. not, it's more likely to break down again. So you have to know that it's a healing stage 4 instead of just a stage 2 because your tissue around it is not as stable.
Okay. So you mentioned a little earlier that we want to document the wound edge or the skin surrounding the wound. What are some of the things that we're looking for? Like are we looking for redness, like blood? I don't know. Like walk us through that checklist.
So the surrounding tissue, we're looking for redness, but you also want to know if it's red, if it's blanchable, because if you have redness around your wound that's not blanching, chances are that wound is going to get bigger because it's already started stage one around the wound. And it can also be indicative of the intervention's not being appropriate. Maybe there's too much pressure on that wound and you need to change your interventions.
And I guess at the end of the day, like you want to err on the with a pressure injury, especially a 3 or 4, you want to err on the side of too much documentation rather than too little.
Yes.
Well, Miranda, we really appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, I hope you found this episode educational. If you have an idea for a topic that you would like for me to discuss, please let me know. If you have an idea for a guest that you would like for me to talk to, please let me know that as well. New episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast come out every Monday. And remember, skillet cook bacon every day. Okay. Nothing in the oven. Just cook it in the skillet. Makes your house smell better. The whole shebang. Win the mug. Good luck to you for those that enter. Of course, no one will. It's kind of like the reverse Thunderdome. Nobody enters, nobody wins. And I guess with that, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.